even that profile, it's not a static thing. It's not like you, this is the way you communicate always.
Welcome everyone once again to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Calder, riding solo just for a little bit here as we get the intro into this podcast out of the way. We're soon to be joined by Matt and Bo from Autism Spectrum Australia. In a lot of topics, we sort of go fairly wide. This one is really dialed into how we can work with and coach autistic people better. So this is, you know, we want to try and make the sport and basketball in particular more inclusive for autistic people for sure. And it's becoming better coaches. There are better practices we can take out of this that we can really apply into our own coaching in particular. So one of the big telling stats is 1 in 40 people are, or Australians, sorry, are autistic, and many of them want to play sport, but there are barriers that get in the way of that. Big chance, and looking back on my coaching in particular, that I would have coached someone who is autistic and they may not have known, and I probably didn't know in that space. So we want to try and create an environment that helps everyone, players and coaches in that space. So we'll hear from Matt and Bo. They'll talk a lot about their professional and lived experiences, some strategies that we can use to help make it a better space for everyone, and just some examples and a six-step framework that you can use to apply things straight away. So hopefully you'll be able to walk away with some tools to make your coaching more inclusive, more structured and more effective when you're coaching autistic people. So we'll jump in with Matt and Bo straight away. So welcome everybody. We are joined by Matt and Bo from Autism Spectrum Australia. So very happy to have you both in. This is obviously a very important topic that that we want as many coaches to hear about as possible. I'll start off with you, Matt, and then we'll jump to you, Bo. Matt, can you just give us your background, I suppose, in sport and in particular working with autistic people?
Yes, well, sport is definitely not professional in any way. I played, obviously, in high school. I probably have come to be more involved in sport through my work. So working for ASPECT or Autism Spectrum Australia, I've been there 11 years. My background is as a support worker supporting autistic adults who also have intellectual disability and sort of more complex support needs. And a lot of that was, I guess, trying to get people into physical activity. So going swimming and doing like personal training and yoga and trying to adapt programs for people to get, you know, physically active and physically well. For the last 6 years or so, I've run or been involved with a team called Autism Friendly, and we consult with lots of different types of organizations on how to be more inclusive and accessible for autistic people. As part of that, we've worked with lots of sports over the years. So things like Surf Life Saving, Western Sydney Wanderers, soccer in Sydney, basketball in Sydney, whole bunch of different organizations, 10-pin bowling, touch football. And so we're constantly learning, I guess, like, you know, how to get more people involved and the benefits of doing it as well. And then sort of for the last 12, 18 months now and for the next at least 6 months, we'll be working with sort of major sports in Melbourne as well. So things like circus, football and basketball Victoria as well, which is really exciting.
Yeah, awesome.
Don't forget orienteering.
Some really interesting, unique niche sports. Yep. And also obviously major sports. I think it's really important that we have opportunities, you know, various opportunities for people to participate. So, I guess we're just trying to develop more places that people can go.
Absolutely. And Bo, what about your background in sport and this space?
So I grew up playing basketball. Basketball is my favouritest sport interest. I am actually travelling to Berlin next year for the FIBA Women's World Cup.
Awesome.
That's how much I love basketball. I grew up playing basketball, played for some state teams, and blew my knee out quite early on, and now I am just a couch coach, I would say, having opinions and shouting at my TV.
That's everyone's origin story. Yeah. Like, it's everyone's come from an injury to couch coach.
Yep, so two knee replacements later, in my workspace, I was a kindergarten teacher teacher for 20 years, so in that year before going to school. And I got old and needed a bit of a career change, and the opportunity came up to work with the autism-friendly team. So same with Matt, working with a variety of organisations, including Basketball Victoria, who are doing a wonderful job of creating a space where autistic people can come and play the sport that I just love.
Yep, makes a lot of sense. And don't forget orienteering. Like, more to the point, like, it's basketball's fairly easy. It's 94 feet long, you know, straight lines. Orienteering, you get 1 degree off, that can cause you some problems in that space. So fantastic to have you working with us in this space. I suppose we'll start off, because there'll be a lot of people that probably aren't aware more than anything else. Matt, do you want to take us through what autism actually is? Because there's probably a lot of misconceptions out there, a lot of people that may not understand exactly what it is.
Yes. Like you say, there are lots of misconceptions. I think our understanding has changed even over the last 10 years or so. I think it's changing rapidly. Autism, I guess, essentially is a neurological condition. So that means, I guess, people's brains work differently and process information differently to other people. That's not to say, like, everybody's brain is different. And so we often say, like, neurodiversity is a fact. Everybody has different brains. So there isn't a normal, typical brain and something that diverges from that per se. But for autistic people, it's sort of like the brain is wired differently and so takes in and processes information differently. So that impacts everything about our lives. That is things like how we socialize, how we communicate, how we experience the sensory world, how we think and plan and process information maybe looks a bit different. The interesting thing about autism is that it's a spectrum, and I think a lot of people think about it sort of as like a linear spectrum. So you're not very autistic to very autistic, you're at the high end or the low end or that sort of thing. It's really not as simple as a binary line from one end to the other. It's much more complex than that, and therefore everybody's so different. It's so individual how people, you know, experience the world. So we think about it more like a color spectrum, more like a color wheel, where it's a bit more three-dimensional. And I guess where you sit and fit, your profile is different to other people. Even that profile, it's not a static thing. It's not like, you know, this is the way you communicate always. Bo and I are here doing a podcast. We can talk. Probably at the end of the day, we'll start losing our ability to produce words. We'll get tired, overwhelmed, exhausted, and then our communication will be impacted. So it can change day to day, moment to moment as well. Probably some of the things we do know about it are that it's genetic. So that's like a strong genetic base, and that's lifelong. It's just sort of part of human diversity. It's a really valuable and important thing to our lives. It's not just a disability or a deficit. There's lots of strengths and different ways of working, different ways of thinking that you know, bring benefits. But there are also some, I guess, some challenges that and barriers sort of in living in society today that I guess we need different types of support sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's just being a human too. Like that's really what a lot of people that get involved in coaching in the first place, they're doing it to help. Like that should be a core function of most coaches. And then there have probably been plenty of times over the course where I've had autistic people in teams that I've been coaching that I just didn't know, you know, had autism or were autistic. So, I mean, how prevalent, I suppose, is it, Bo, in the sport in particular, that how many people would be autistic?
Yeah. Our current stats sit at 1 in 40 Australians on the autism spectrum. However, considering that there's actually a lot of barriers to participating in sport, that number is not reflected in, say, Basketball Victoria's roster of players. And so considering that there is 1 in 40, there is most likely going to be somebody who is autistic on your team, or you might have a child whose parent is autistic who is coming along to cheer on, you know, their child and their team. And I think it's really important to note that 69% of autistic people actually want to participate in sport more. And like that's a huge number, and because of these barriers that are there, we're people are missing out on participating in the sport that I love and the sport that you love, and getting those benefits from participating in sport. Lifting of mood, good physical well-being. I think the current stats are down from 1 in 70 to 1 in 40.
Yeah, so just over the last couple of years, I guess new stats have come out, and it's not because there's more autistic people now than there used to be. It's just because we've got better at diagnosing, or the diagnostic criteria has adapted over time, particularly to include women and girls and sort of non-traditional gender presentations as well. So historically, it was really centered around young boys, the diagnosis. And so I guess being able to adapt those criteria now that we know a bit more, I guess we're recognizing people that present differently as well.
Yep.
And just on your comment earlier, Rob, about, I guess, like coaches being helpers, like that's a big part of, I guess, the profession. I guess what I've found through my work doing this for 11 years is, like, at the same time as being a support worker, I also worked in retail as a manager for a while. And after learning some of the principles and the practices of, you know, good autism support, I started applying them just in my day-to-day retail management. And I realized that they just benefited everybody. And it's something I often hear now when we go and present and work with organizations. We talk through our autism-friendly framework or our six steps and so on. And often people say, oh, that's actually just good for me as well. Like I need good information before I go somewhere or that sort of thing. So I think my hope is that it's just a different way of, like, there's more tools on the tool belt, I guess, as a coach to consider, like, how can I adapt for different people? Now I have some extra areas to think about that I can apply to everybody, regardless of whether they have a diagnosis or not. They're just sort of, different techniques I could pull out.
Yeah, really like that. And I think it's a great analogy. I think the tool belt one is that not every team will need the same things from you as a coach, and not every player will need the same thing from you as a coach. So it's a really valuable thing, I think, to have some awareness about if you are a coach. I mean, I'll go back to you for a second, Bo. Because you came up through the basketball pathway, I suppose we'll speak mainly to that. Mm-hmm. But what barriers do autistic people have when joining sport or even participating in sport? Because you mentioned just before that they want to play.
They do.
Yeah.
We do. Yep. We do. We want to play. Yep. So interestingly, like I can speak on lived experience because I did play basketball growing up, but Aspect have actually done some research into this, there's some research that shows that the barriers to participating in sport, include exclusion and bullying. Now, I can talk a little bit about exclusion because not to blow my own horn, but I was actually very good at basketball. Yep. And when I was on the court, you know, I knew what was happening. I understood the plays. I knew what was expected of me, and I was able to go out and perform. But where I struggled the most was off the court, and being part of a team where you don't really feel that connected socially to a team. There would be, sometimes there'd be team gatherings, and I would either be included and just feel really awful and uncomfortable and horrible throughout that situation, or I wouldn't be invited. Those things can contribute to the type of experience that you're having as being part of a team. Another result from the research that Aspect did was low autism awareness. So people just having that old school mentality of, it's a young boy, it's the, obsessed with trains and lining up all the trains into colours, that's not what it is. And so people often, they just don't know what they're dealing with, so they don't ask and they don't know, and therefore it kind of goes into the too hard basket. Another barrier is anxiety and pressure. Like there's a lot of, particularly in the elite pathways, there's a lot of pressure to perform and to conform, to do it the way that every individual coach wants to. Every individual coach has a different way of doing things. And as you're growing up, as you move through under 12s, under 14s, under 16s, you've got different coaches who all want different things out of you. And the anxiety about getting it right. Autistic people are very much, can be very much rule followers and people pleasers. And the anxiety of not performing, not conforming, and not getting it right can have significant impacts on whether somebody is arriving at the stadium each week for training or staying at home. Some other areas were like inflexible programs. So just, you know, nope, I am the coach. This is the way that we're doing it. There is not going to be any changes to that. And I don't know, Rob, have you been on a basketball court where there's been like four or five games playing at one time?
Yeah, pretty much every Friday night you go in. Like if you went to MSAC, so Melbourne Sports and Aquatic Centre, yep. You've got eight games going at the same time. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on. I've frequently said if you're ever going to have an upset in a game, like where someone's going to beat someone out of the blue, it's there.
Yep.
Because someone will stop for a whistle on another court that's actually not their court, or they'll hear an instruction from a different coach that is not meant for them. And just weird stuff happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So if you consider a young person, like say maybe a under 14s team, you have a young person who has tried to hold it together as much as they can all day at school. They might have done sport. They might have had an excursion. You know, it's Friday. It's the end of the week. I don't know about you, but I'm, you know, ready for a cup of tea and a lie down on a Friday afternoon. And so you have this young person who has experienced all of these challenges throughout the course of the week. Then they're expected to go out onto the court, perform, conform, get it right in amongst all of that noise. And can you imagine the sensory overload that that person is feeling even before they step on the court? The busyness of a foyer, walking into the stadium. Here it's great. We are currently sitting at the State Basketball Centre, which is delightful. Basketball stadiums have changed a lot since I played, Rob.
You and me both.
But, you know, here we've got like three courts, but you've got so many people. There's balls bouncing, there's whistles blowing, there's people cheering, there's hopefully not too many coaches yelling, but, you know,
talking loudly.
Yeah, talking loudly. The squeaky shoes, the lights, all of those things, and all of these things coming together like just creates sensory overload. And that's a really challenging experience for young people. So, you know, is it a wonder that, you know, you're getting people who are boiling over and, you know, having these, reactions to what their senses are experiencing. So there's some of the barriers that that exist within within autistic people wanting to participate in sport. Yep.
I think it's important to mention as well, I guess we think about barriers. I think, again, our perspective has changed on disability and autism. Yes, there are some inherent challenges. Like if you experience the senses really intensely and you're quite sensitive to the senses, you can become overwhelmed and go into meltdown or shutdown. But I guess instead of thinking about it through the traditional or medical model of disability where we assume that's a problem with you, so Bo, if you're sensory sensitive, you have a problem and you need to work out how to deal with that to fit in with everybody else.
It's my fault, Matt. It's my fault.
I think that we think about it more through what's called the social model of disability. The social model of disability is considering the things that disable people. So the environmental impacts, so that can be the physical environment, it can be processes, it can be other people and attitudes and behaviors of other people. And trying to adapt some of those so that it's not so noisy, overwhelming, loud. And obviously that benefits Bo, so that Bo doesn't have to work so hard and can participate better in basketball. But also, ultimately, it's not so loud, overwhelming, and so on, so that everybody's nervous system can be calmer. So there's less aggression and overwhelm and that sort of thing. So I think it's really important for us to think about, you know, it's all of our responsibility, including as coaches and as part of the community, is to try and just do little bits to reduce some of those things, you know, our attitudes and the sensory environment, and reduce some of the anxiety by, you know, helping people feel comfortable or giving enough information beforehand. so that we can all participate together. And again, ultimately that benefits everybody because, you know, often we bring new ways or skills, like, you know, Bo is a great basketball player. Bo could be a great team member, and that's what we're missing out on.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think back, like, talking to you both about this, and we've had some chats obviously before this anyway, and I was thinking back, like, in a previous life before working at Basketball Victoria, I worked for a sporting company that effectively you'd go around and every 2 weeks you'd change the sport, but you'd just go to a school for an hour after school. And I was thinking about a kid that I had, and I still remember the kid, that was just a nightmare to deal with at the end of the day. Like, it really was. Like, it hit 3:30 and this kid was just as loose could get. And every week I kind of dreaded going to that session as well because it's like, I know I'm going to have to deal with this kid. And there was one week where he wasn't there and it went really well. And it's like, okay, that kid's clearly the problem. It's like, no, the kid is not the problem. Like, it's not their fault. And it was only after doing a little bit of digging, and it's like, well, okay, there are probably some things that I could be doing differently as the coach that could actually really help. And again, to your point before, Matt, about, you know, you using some of the skills in retail as well, like, they just may be a better coach, like, being aware of it. Like, and I think it really was. It was just, you know, I was an 18-year-old kid that had no idea as to why won't this kid stand next to that cone when I've asked him to stand next to that cone. That was my biggest problem in the world. And it's like, well, okay, whilst it's my biggest problem, it's probably not his. Like, he's got different things going on. So it really is. It just gives a different lens, I think, to what we're doing. And it's not something to be fearful of. It's something to be really understanding of because it can make you a better coach, I think, for anyone that's coaching. And, of course, if you're a better coach, your players will enjoy the sport more, they'll keep coming back more, and it becomes a really safe and welcoming environment for them to be in. So that's one of the areas that I think as coaches we can really tap into. I'm curious, some really practical ideas for coaches in particular. So I look back on my time there and think, yeah, I screwed some things up as a young coach that didn't know what they were doing. What are some of the things that you could tell our coaches now that would maybe circumvent those problems before they become problems?
Yeah, I think in a way, just the opposite of those barriers. The opposite of that. So I guess having like a welcome and inclusive culture, have a bit of flexibility and try and treat people as individuals and work, you know, figure out how they work. Make sure like programs are accessible and different ways of participating for different people. I think we'll get into our like more practical six-step process in a sec, but I think some of the particularly like key principles often in our work in Autism Friendly is make it visual.
Yep.
So that's having clear and visual instructions, communication, and supports. But maybe we'll talk about that more in a minute. The other one is making it sensory friendly. Everybody experiences the senses differently. It can, you know, overwhelming stuff can lead to that fight, flight or freeze. So like, I guess, feeling aggression or trying to get away from the situation. And so trying to keep people's nervous system, you know, in that just right zone, it helps people learn. If you're not in that zone, then you're hyper or hypoactive and it's harder to take things in and to learn and participate as well. So I think, yes, some of the principles: make it really structured, make it visual, and make it sensory friendly as much as possible. But again, maybe we can talk about that as we go through. Yep. I think probably for us, again, with the social model, we're trying to make the environment or the program generally universally autism friendly. I think that's the first thing, so that we're universally applying the different resources or strategies that we'll talk about. Because again, we also know that they'll help other people too. They're not just singling out a person. We're only not just making adaptations for us, you know, for an individual. We're just making the process really intuitive, clear, structured, visual, sensory friendly, and trying to be proactive and consistent about that. So that ultimately we're not just addressing, you know, challenging behavior, but that we're not, like, we're developing the environment so that it doesn't get to that point, hopefully, because people are calm, they're confident, they know what's going on, they feel included, they don't feel overwhelmed. And so we're not getting to that point of having to deal with stuff that we're finding challenging. That's still going to happen, but we're trying to reduce it as well.
Yeah, it makes sense. And the terminology of deal with, like, is one that strikes me straight away. And, you know, I certainly felt like that as the young 18-year-old kid that was trying to teach this kid hockey. I had no chance. And my thought process straight away was, I'm going to need to deal with this kid every week rather than
how can I make him feel more a part of what we're doing in the first? So I don't have to deal with him. I'm just coaching in that space. So I think there's almost a little bit of fear that might go through the minds of coaches when they're thinking, okay, do I have an autistic person in my team? And that groan almost that the potentially comes, oh, okay, I'm going to have to change how I coach. Good. Like, that, don't fear it. That's a good thing. Like, that's, view it as a really good way to maybe change some things that go on in your life and in your world and how you communicate, because chances are, speaking to the statistics again, if you have someone in your team, there's probably someone at work that you just may not be privy to. There's someone probably in your family that you just may not be aware of in that space. So I think there are just some common traits for coaches that can just make them better people in this space as well.
I think it's almost like a good challenge. So I'm a rugby league supporter,
yep.
And I follow it quite closely, and particularly lots of coaches.
Go Panthers!
I'm a Panthers fan.
That's unfortunate. Yeah. So we've run out of time today on the podcast. Like, it's this is a Melbourne Storm town, Matt.
Well, look, we both lost, so it's fine.
Yeah, that's
just what I know, I guess, about, you know, being involved in team sports and watching, is that it's really important that you have different people that work and think differently. You need different sizes, body shapes. You need, yeah, different ways of thinking. And so as a coach, I think it should be an important challenge to think about, how can I diversify? How can I develop a team that, you know, has all of that sort of complexity in the team? Because you have more options and you have more flexibility as a team to adapt and change throughout a game, for instance, or throughout a season. So I think it's actually a really, like, valuable thing to consider, rather than how do I get everyone to conform to my way of thinking.
Yep.
Doesn't mean you don't have good strategy and good systems and that sort of thing as a coach. You still need that, but you incorporate the strengths of your team to be able to do that. And I think that, you know, I just find it really interesting challenge.
It is. And I'm curious, Bo, because obviously you came up through the basketball pathway in particular. What are some of the sensory issues that you might have someone, an autistic person, have in that space? Like you mentioned before, like squeaky shoes, basketball's bouncing. Is there anything else?
Yes. Yep. So when you're on the court, I had a general idea of what to expect. Like, you know, there was going to be body contact. You know, I was going to bump into people. I was set it. Oh, Rob, I could set a screen. I could set.
Well, I would have enjoyed coaching you, because my kingdom for someone that can set a screen at this point.
Absolutely. So in the actual gameplay, I was I was ready and I was prepared for those types of sensory experiences. But one of the things that I personally don't enjoy in terms of my sensory self is light touch. At the time, all of my teammates knew, you know, I think somebody accidentally lightly touched me once, and, you know, I had a bit of a response, and, you know, everyone just kind of knew, you know, don't lightly touch Bo. Yep. You know, it needs to be pressure. But that information was not communicated to everybody, because it was the 90s, and I didn't know that I was autistic, and you know, we didn't have you know, relationships that, you know, we might build with coaches and team managers and getting to know our referees. And a referee just lightly touched me on the back of my shoulder. And is it okay for me to say that I punched a coach? I punched a ref.
We don't endorse it necessarily, but there were ways to there's no other way to put it.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
Rob, I am an absolute marshmallow of a human. Like, I'm not aggressive. I'm not an angry person, but I felt this light touch as a pain sensation, and my body reacted, and I punched a ref in the face. Obviously, that's not what I wanted to do. I've never punched anybody ever again. And obviously, I had the repercussions of that action, because I punched a ref. It was a horrible, horrible experience. But if we had some systems in place that, you know, that referee knew not to lightly touch me, that incident would not have happened. And you know, so all of the sensory experiences that I was experiencing leading up to that point, so the light touch, you know, in itself would probably make me feel a little bit, you know, uncomfortable, maybe feel a little bit of pain. But, you know, I was in a stadium. It was the 90s, so it was a shed.
Blockbuster and Pizza Hut, that's pretty much what ruled our worlds at that stage.
Yeah, that's Pizza Hut. That's where I'd get excluded from the team team gathering afterwards. Yeah.
Probably better for your long-term health. Not that I want to slight our good friends at Pizza Hut. However, you know, the works has done probably worse for my health over the years than it has benefited, yes, it'd be fair to say.
Absolutely. But, you know, things like the uniforms. Oh, my goodness. Wearing a basketball uniform was just a horrible sensory experience for me. Having to wear a singlet.
Yep.
I don't wear a singlet any other time in my life. I'm not a singlet wearer. In fact, I probably prefer a long sleeve top. Yep. But you know, I was having to wear these short, you know, sleeved things, and you know, so like there's a lot of sensory input that is coming in that can lead somebody to melt down or shut down. Or punch a ref. Yep. Matt, shall we talk about like the information about the whistles that we found out?
Yeah, I guess just to mention about the senses as well. Like, hopefully most of us know about the five outside senses.
Yep.
Sight, hearing, smell, touch, taste. There's also internal senses as well. So there's your sense of balance or vestibular. There's also your sense of proprioception, which is sort of like your body awareness, where your body and your limbs are in relation to other things. And there's also interoception, which is your ability to identify your internal states. So, you know, that you're hungry or thirsty or feeling overwhelmed and tired and that sort of thing. All of those can be impacted, and everyone's different. So some people are really sensitive to light touch. Some people are really sensitive to balance, for instance. Some people are undersensitive to a lot of these different sensations as well. And so won't know that they're bumping into people because they don't have that proprioceptive input.
Yep.
So then people will choose maybe to wear tight-fitting clothes or heavy clothes and that sort of thing to give them more input. And so I think it's important to notice that, like, that it's quite complex and everybody's different. And it's just understanding different people's profiles or ways of working. I think, though, there are common things that are just generally overwhelming, loud, unexpected things. And whistles is just the, you know, the top of the pops here, I reckon.
Yep.
And so through our work with Basketball Victoria, we have learned about different whistles, which I guess most people in the community wouldn't really think about. I hadn't. But Bo, I guess there's like two ends of the spectrum in terms of whistles.
Yeah, so we found out that there's different types of whistles. Like, I just kind of presumed that everyone was using a whistle. A whistle is a whistle is a whistle, right?
Yep.
However, having a discussion with Gemma here at Basketball Victoria, she was explaining, and then I went and did a deep dive into whistles. So the top of the range, you know, fancy pants, I'm a cool ref whistle is called a blazer. And I had a bit of a look on the website around what the blazer is useful for. So your blazer whistle is absolutely for your international competition, your NBA, WNBA, WNBL, international competitions, playing in full stadiums with all the bells and whistles. You need to be able to hear the whistle. So your blazer, absolutely perfect for that. Whereas I don't think the blazer is necessarily required at, Tuesday night down at the rec center for, you know, Tuesday night of basketball.
Yeah.
You know, we're not at international level down there.
I'll let you let those people know that they're not at international level because that might be the most important part of their week. But I do agree with you that they probably don't quite need the same level.
Yes. Gemma recommended like a Fox 40 whistle. That's just the name of it. This podcast is not sponsored by Fox 40 whistles.
Oh, we'll accept sponsorships. Yeah. Like, always happy to put the hand out for that sort of stuff. But yes.
Rob, Pizza Hut and whistles. You're gonna be living the dream.
True. This could change my life. Yeah. But I do agree. Like I did used to ref, and Fox 40 was like the first whistle we ever got. It's fine.
Yeah.
Like it's.
So
you can hear it.
Interesting information about the Fox 40 whistle is that if you blow that whistle, it can be heard up to a mile away.
Yep.
Like that's a really long distance for a whistle. We don't need the Blazers. We don't need six courts running at the stadium where, you know, two refs per court are blowing Blazer whistles. Like, you know, it's just not required. And you know, if we could get some standardization with the whistles at that particular level, it's just removing a extra. Like the barrier will still be there because you need referees to have whistles, but the impact that it's going to have on individual people, whether they're autistic or not, is going to be significant.
Yep. No, that makes a lot of sense.
It's these small things that build up throughout a day or throughout an event. So if you can maybe just turn the whistle down a little bit or use a different whistle, if you could have less people, if you could maybe be flexible with the uniform that you could wear long sleeves instead of a singlet. All of these little things add up to people being able to participate well and to be sort of valuable team members.
It's funny because I was at the shopping centre the other day and was just happened to be walking through and I noticed, geez, there's some lights out around the place and there's no music playing. I'm like, this is actually a little bit surreal. Like, what has happened here? And it was only that I happened to be walking past and it's like, look, between these hours we are, you know, having the minimal lights. Like, they're not all going to be on. There's going to be enough that you can see. And we're not playing music. And it's like, oh, it's actually quite nice. Like not having that going the entire time. It's like, I could get on board this. Like this is a space I could quite happily be in.
We work with lots of organisations that do that. And so what I have learned recently is that people spend more money when there's music on.
Yeah, right.
So that's why it's there. Yep. But for a lot of us, I don't because it's too much. And so I need to leave.
Avoid the shops,
So being able to be flexible and have those different options for people that need it, but also talking to some of the big retailers, like staff that have participated in these times, the staff say, I feel less exhausted at the end of the day.
Yeah, right.
Because there's less input. The customers are less, you know, overwhelmed and aggressive and so on. So there are benefits to those things. And again, providing that flexibility or different options is really helpful.
Yeah, I like it. So you spoke before, Matt, about six steps. Like, let's unpack those a little bit for the coaches out there that are potentially listening and even some of the players and parents that are potentially listening in this sort of space. So what are the six-step process? Like, jump in.
Yes. Well, I'll just introduce each step as we go, maybe, and we can just talk about that and then move on. So the first one is, and hopefully all of these are, like, really doable for people. I think that's the point, is that they're not crazy. Like, you're probably doing a lot of this already, but it's just doing it consistently. First one is get prepared. So autistic people, we know, generally seem to thrive when we know what to expect, what we're expected to do, how things work, you know, who's going to be there, all the who, what, when, where, why, how. And also just by knowing about sensory experiences before they happen, it significantly reduces that overwhelm and distress. So even just like, hey, Bo, I'm going to touch you on the shoulder now, that would reduce that overwhelm because it's predictable. Yep. So that predictability is really important. So it's preparing yourself as the coach by getting good information about players is one thing. So to understand your players, but also just making sure you're prepared. You've got, like, if the more prepared you are, the more prepared I am. If you're not prepared and you don't know what's going on, I'm going to start stressing out because I don't know what's going on and you don't, so who does? So it's making sure that you're really prepared. And then preparing the players with really good information beforehand. And generally we try and do that visually. So that could be, like, we often use a thing called a visual story. It could even just be in emails. I know if I go back to the Panthers in rugby league, they're really good at even right through their lower grades. They plan their session for, you know, their training session for next week. And they send video examples, video modeling of the different things they're practicing to the people beforehand so that they can watch those things we're going to be rehearsing next week so that they're prepared. So when you turn up, everybody's on, everybody knows what's going on, and it helps to reduce that anxiety, but it also, I guess, makes sure, everybody's sort of set. And the third thing is preparing the physical environment. So making sure it's really structured, organized. So when you turn up, you know where you put your stuff. You know where you go. You know how the drill is going to look and where you start and where you end. So it's making sure that you're prepared, you're preparing other people, and you're preparing the physical environment so that you're ready to go.
Yep, really like that. And, I mean, obviously coaches would be putting a session plan together, just sharing that session plan beforehand, just so everyone's got a little bit of an idea of, look, this is what's coming. Over the years, you'll probably end up creating a little bit of a bank of things where it's you're not creating necessarily something every time. It's literally, okay, I've used that before, put it in. People can see it. And that's, I mean, one of the biggest things we tell coaches straight away, because I get asked to evaluate a lot of coaches at training sessions. The first thing I do is when I walk in, where's your session plan? And the answer is usually, oh, it's in my head, as they point to their head. And it's like, yeah, cool. No, like that's not what we're after here. We need it physically produced. Now, if that's on your phone, that's cool. Like I'm not expecting everyone to print out, you know, save the trees, all that sort of stuff. But you do have to have a session plan that is planned out as to what you're going to get done. Yeah, the outcomes might change week to week. That's okay. But just sharing that plan with other people, and it normally would go from the head coach to the assistant coach, whatever the case might be, but send it to your players. Let them have a little bit of a look at it as well so they know what they're walking into, because that can be a nerve-wracking environment. In particular, if you have a coach you're not familiar with or a team that you're not familiar with, you know what you're walking into.
Yeah.
That's an easy one, I think, for coaches.
There's a lot of new things, particularly as you change coaches or teams or whatever, and everyone does things differently. So being able to have time to process information and plan and prepare, a lot of autistic people do that. So if as a team we're going to, you know, a Christmas party and we're going to a restaurant, we always send the menu to everybody. We make sure we give instructions about how to get there and where to park and that sort of thing, so that people have that time to see it, plan and prepare. Yep. Often, I guess, people communicate differently. And so if you're there on the day and it's big and loud and overwhelming, new people, and then someone's giving you verbal instructions about all the things that are going to be happening that day, it's too much to process. And so that's where, again, like autistic people often have a strength in visual processing. So being able to see things, yep. See, you know, strategies drawn on a board, you know, which way are we going, where am I on the court, or to see the lesson, you know, the session plan beforehand. It just helps time to process and also allows, yeah, different people who communicate differently, yep, to be involved better.
No, I really like it.
I've got an example of how preparing somebody prior to the program would be helpful. When I was playing, it was I was invited to join the South Australian Sports Institute. Shout out Sassy. Yep.
Still going around.
Yeah, yep. Love it. At the time, like leading up to our first training session, I could feel myself getting more and more anxious about this new experience. You know, it wasn't going to be just my team. It wasn't going to be just my club. It was people from all different clubs, new coaches, brand new environment. And for the first training, I actually faked an injury. I faked a rolled ankle, or I can't even remember what it was. But I was just so overwhelmed about going into this new space that I'd never seen, and I didn't know what was going to happen. I faked an injury, and that meant that I could sit on the side of the court and watch the first training session unfold. Yep. After that, I was absolutely okay to join in. You know, magically my ankle got better and away we go. But, you know, on reflection, however many years later, if I had that information about where it was, who was going to be there, what the venue looked like. I'd never been there before. It was in a part of town that I'd never been in before. Just having that preparation information and in a visual way, you know, it can really help people get in the door, Rob.
Yep.
Because sometimes the hardest thing is getting people through that front door.
Oh, without a doubt.
And imagine how many people are struggling to get in the front door at basketball. Yep. And if we can get them in the door and hopefully provide them with a really great experience, you know, that's only going to benefit basketball.
Oh, without a doubt. And one of the other things you mentioned before was physical touch. in particular. Coaches, there is absolutely no space for you to have your hands on athletes. And this, look, I understand someone goes down with an injury, you might need to help carry them off. I get that one. But we are educating our coaches at the moment, hands off your players. Like that, you don't need to demonstrate drills that way. And we still see videos popping up all the time of someone, oh, look at this new drill, and the coach is like bumping into the player. And I'm like, no, this is not a good idea. Like, this is a bad idea. Protect yourself, protect the athletes. Because one, you never know. Like, it is a little bit of a hidden disability, obviously. You don't know how people are going to react to that. So, again, I know we say this a lot, but coaches, please remove the physical contact with your players. High five on the way through, fist bump. Like, if COVID gave us anything that's great, fist bump is now a very much acceptable way of, you know, saying good job on the way through. So please be mindful of that, coaches. The next one, consider your sensory environment. We have touched on that a little bit, but is there anything else you wanted to unpack in that one, Matt?
Yeah, I think just more practically, like what can you do? So yeah, the first one is get prepared. Yep. The second one is consider the sensory environment. So I guess the principles generally are change what you can.
Yep.
So maybe use a different whistle. Be flexible with, you know, what you can wear, for instance, yep. or like change what you can, and then communicate about what you can't. So like I said before, just by forewarning people about sensory experiences, when we get here, it's going to be really noisy for a bit. There's going to be heaps of people. It just means that you can then use your own strategies. I can put my noise cancelling headphones on, wear my sunglasses, take a break, and that sort of thing, and just prepare myself. The other thing is trying to support coping in the moment. And this could be as simple as just allowing the person to take a break. Hey, we're getting a bit heightened here. Maybe let's just take 5 minutes, take a breath, go somewhere quiet. And generally we try and, we recommend quiet rooms, like a dedicated place that's, you know, private, dignified, where you can just go and retreat and chill for a bit and come back. But just finding those places, even naturally, is really helpful. We all do it. It could be as simple as just having a drink of water. Things like ice and cold water can often really help, be circuit breakers. But also having like sensory items or stim tools, so like spinners and things to squish. And often sport is a sensory thing. So bouncing a basketball is a stim. But it might be providing some of those tools and having them sort of courtside, having noise cancelling headphones or earplugs, and also potentially like learning things like breathing techniques or mindfulness techniques or co-regulation of emotions. So if Bo's overwhelmed and then I start stressing out, Bo's going to be more overwhelmed. And so my job is to stay calm and help Bo like sort of model that. So this is how, I'm feeling, my nervous system's good. And so Bo can sort of steal a bit from that, if that makes sense.
No, I like it. Any examples, I suppose, that you've had, Bo, with the sensory that you haven't touched on yet? I know we've spoken about the singlets, the whistles, squeaking shoes, bouncing basketballs, and coaches just yelling at in general. Is there anything else?
I can set you up here, Bo. But
okay,
I think,
thank you.
I think heat is one.
Oh, yes. Yes. I as Matt was referring to earlier, the interoception. I have a just innate fear of getting hot. I can't. If I'm starting to get hot and overheat, it actually makes me start to panic, because it's a whatever. And sometimes I'm not aware of when I'm starting to get hot and starting to overheat. So things like if I am getting a bit overwhelmed, or if I'm getting, a little bit, I'm having trouble focusing, or I'm, might be in a meeting with Matt and I'm starting to lose my words, Matt might say, do you need to put your fan on? Do you want to take your jumper off? Hey, Boo. I'm just going to go grab a glass of water. Do you want to grab one too? Just to, help me understand why I'm feeling the way that I am, and just some really gentle ways to support me to regulate my well-being, I guess.
Yeah, cool. Really like it. All right, what's third, Matt?
So it's a bit of a confusing, it's set up for success, which is obviously what we're going to do. So I should probably explain that a bit. It's more like we've prepared, we've set up the environment, we've thought about the sensory environment, we get there on the day, The first thing is we want to make people feel welcome. And we said before, like in the research, one of the biggest barriers is just exclusion and judgment and lack of understanding for other people. So the first thing that we do is generally in any of our meetings and so on that we recommend in sport is like an inclusion statement. So something really simple. Hey, everybody is welcome here. Your participation is valued. Like, we want everybody here to be here. It's so good to have you. Please use any strategies that help you to feel relaxed. Like, do work the way that works for you that helps you to participate. So it's not just like go and do whatever you want to do, but it's the stuff that helps you to participate and focus here. And that might be sitting on your hands, but it also might be running around in circles, but you're taking in what's happening because you're moving your body to help you focus. And then let us know if there's anything we can do to help. So the first thing is just try and make everybody feel welcome. The second thing is to try and develop shared expectations. Often if I am a coach and I come and say, you must do this, other people don't necessarily maybe understand or agree on what those expectations are. And a lot of the time they're quite like complex or convoluted. So recently we were working with a library. They have their code of conduct and it says, you must be respectful. And I don't know what respectful means. Respectful is different for each person. Is it making eye contact or not making eye contact? Because different cultures, that's one of those respectful ones, not. So it's being really specific, literal, and objective about how things should work here. And not just being dictatorial and telling people that, but it's agreeing together. Hey, how do we want this to work? What do we agree on, what the behavior expectations are, the rules are, or the, you know, the session outline? And again, I think that's good coaching and good team is you need to get buy-in from everybody as well. So make everyone feel welcome, develop shared expectations. The way that we generally do this is through a what we call a visual schedule. A visual schedule or a visual timetable is something that we use all the time in Aspect schools, adult services. We use them in team meetings. They're called agendas. So it's a visual way of outlining all the different things that are coming up. So in a session, it might be we're going to do a welcome, then we're going to do a warm-up, then we're going to do a drill, then we're going to do a pair activity, and then we're going to take a break. Doing a visual schedule helps people to remember what they're supposed to do, especially if it's displayed there and you can return back to it. Make sure everyone's on the same page and we're doing the same thing. But it also really helps people to transition between activities. For autistic people, a lot of the time, moving from one thing to another, one place to another, one activity to another is really difficult. So a visual schedule is really easy. Hey, everybody, we've just finished this one. Now we're going to do this one. And it helps give that time to process and, again, visually support the information rather than just relying on verbal information. So that's what setting up for success looks like, is like at the start of a session, set it up so that hopefully it's successful for everybody. Yeah,
really like that one. Again, I don't think that's grossly outside what our coaches do at the moment. Like, that's the reassuring part of all of this. Like, I'm certainly not saying we're good in basketball and, you know, we have no room to improve. But I think it is something that most coaches would probably already do. They can just refine a little bit more, just make better, I think, which is actually a really promising thing. All right, what's next?
Okay, so the next one is teaching new skills. And I guess the first thing that's important to remember is that everybody's different. And so there's not one way. I'm not just coming here to say you should teach skills this way for autistic people. Yep. Unfortunately, all autistic people are different, as everybody else is different. And so we need to have multiple ways of being able to do that and adapt to individual learning styles. But we, in our work, in sort of adult support and in schools and in our autism friendly team, even we use a principle, which is I do, we do, you do. So we used it with Bo when Bo first started in our team. So I wonder if I'm going to test you here, Bo, what does I do, we do, you do look like?
Okay. So I do, meaning you, Matthew, Matt would demonstrate how to do a certain thing. So it might be logging on to the system or, it might be presenting a training. So I would sit and I would observe Matt doing the task or the run the program or whatever it was. And slowly Matt would support me to start to participate in that. So if Matt was running a training, if we were doing a webinar online, Matt might take the bulk of it, but I might say, hey, Matt, I'm feeling comfortable doing these three slides. And Matt would say, great, let's get you in. So we would do the task or present or whatever it might be, together. And slowly over time, Matt would fade his support out to eventually where I could do it myself. So, and sometimes Matt would... It's not a set stage. Yep. Like sometimes Matt would, you know, we would be in a you do situation, and I just go, oh no, Matt, I've forgotten. Can you help? And so Matt would then bring, like we would then move back to the we do stage, where he would provide me with the support that I needed to understand that. Mostly it was about tech, wasn't it? Because I'm old. yeah. What's an email, Matthew? Yeah.
Something I avoid, as it turns out. It's but technology is a great example of that. Like, what happens when it goes wrong?
Okay, so firstly, I want to say that for the majority of my time as a basketballer, I had a really great, wonderful experience. I loved playing basketball. I loved being part of a team. I'm sharing the worst stories. Yep. of the time for the most part. I wasn't punching people in the face. But I remember this one particular drill that we were doing under 14. So I would have been, what, 12 years old. We were doing this drill. We were doing a defensive drill. So we had to start at one baseline, get into our defensive stance, shuffle across to the other side of the court at around about the foul line, hit the floor, pivot, and then, shuffle over to the other side of the court, and make it all the way down. So if you did something wrong in that drill, you'd get sent back to the baseline. And you'd have to start again. And so, I did something that wasn't correct, got sent back to the baseline. And then I think I made it to like half court. Nah, got sent back to the baseline. And then I think I only made it to the first foul line the third time, got sent back. I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing wrong.
Yep.
Like no idea. So I'm starting to feel embarrassed. I'm starting to feel ashamed. I'm starting to lose confidence. And I'm also really confused because I have no idea what it is that I am doing wrong. And eventually, I think I got a few pity passes and, managed to finish the drill. But I was the last one out there while everyone else was watching. The parents were watching. People walking past were watching. And there's just me shuffling from one side of the court to the other, getting set back each time. And when I did finish that, in the last motion, I had tears rolling down my face. I was so embarrassed. I felt so stupid. I felt so dumb. And it was just this really horrible, horrible experience, which could have been avoided by my coach saying, hey, let's have a look at this. Okay, this is what I want you to do. I'm gonna show you how to do it. And then we're gonna do it together. Right. And then once you've got it, then I'm gonna let you go. But instead I was left to try and work out what it was that I was doing wrong.
And let's face it, no one likes defense anyway.
Oh, no. Like it's no.
Two knee terrible part of the game.
Two knee replacements, Rob.
I get it.
That situation could have been very different had that coach taken on the I do, we do, you do coaching approach.
I said at the start as well, make it visual.
Yep.
Often autistic people have a strength in visual processing. And so I know a lot of people that will be able to, like, again, if you role model it, if you show what it looks like, if we see a video, as an example, we did some training for a state transport organization.
Yep.
And they're responsible for the lollipop people, oh, yeah. the school crossing supervisors. Yep. They said their best staff are their autistic staff, because the autistic staff watched the video of how to turn the the sign.
Yep.
And they do it exactly the same every time. They move the... So, like, being able to see what it looks like, break it down to its component parts, whereas if you're just explaining that drill verbally, you're missing a lot of information. It's only that explanation from the person. So being able to visibly see it and then fade support over time rather than just send you out to fail and then you know, tell you off for doing it wrong. So that's the principle is let's let me show you. Let's do it together until you feel comfortable, and then we can fade it.
Yep. I really like it. All right, the next one.
Number five is proactive problem solving. The idea is if we can predict it, we can prevent it. Yep. It's really simple, but it's almost like the most important part or thing that I learned, I think, in support work. Often, I think we talked earlier, if we see sort of like a behavior that we don't understand or something that we find frustrating, like this kid and, you know, in the afternoon, we assume like when things go wrong or differently, it's a problem with the person. They're being, you know, they're trying to be rude or they're trying to be frustrating or they're punching someone, you know, because they're just a bad person. Generally, when there are situations we don't understand, it's more to do with the things that led up to it, the environmental factors, the you know, the things that have built up throughout the day that have resulted in this one moment. And so being proactive or proactive problem solver is, first of all, being a good detective and trying to notice what impacted things going wrong or going differently, what led up to it, what was happening around, you know, in the environment and that sort of thing. So we can address, like through that social model, we can try and address those different barriers or impacts. So it's not blaming a person. Yep. It's not blaming Bo for punching. It's maybe there were circumstances that led up to that. And that also put Bo in a situation where Bo then got thrown out and couldn't play and punished for something that really was out of Bo's control. Yep. So it's being a good detective and then doing something about it and not blaming people, but rather trying to, change the process or the environment. Just a really simple example is I was at an airport not too long ago, and I just like to observe how are people using the space? How's it going? What's going on here? So I just stood there for about 10 minutes, and I saw everybody that turned up to the airport went to walk through the big glass walls instead of the big glass doors, because there was no signage or anything to say which one was which. So everybody got there, went through the wrong door. I actually couldn't get through because it was a wall and had to turn around. Oh, let's go over here, go through the doors. If I can predict it, I can prevent it. I can probably assume that someone else is going to do that, so I could put a sign there that says, don't go through here, go through here. So that's the idea of being a good proactive problem solver, is trying to be proactive so it doesn't happen again, and trying to reduce those things that build up to overwhelm.
Yeah, and there will be mistakes that happen in any training session. Like there'll be a session plan where one drill doesn't flow beautifully into the next one and you just make that adjustment next time. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's just learned experiences that you say, okay, well, I won't do that before that next time. I'll just flip it and do it differently. That's so right. There's nothing wrong. Don't fear mistakes. Like mistakes are okay. We're cool with that as coaches. No issue at all. But just learn from them is kind of the big thing there, I think.
That's it. I think it's a nice segue into the last number six as well.
It's like I've read the notes.
which is learn and improve. Yep. So proactive problem solving is sort of more like in the moment and more around like challenging things. But learn and improve is really about having a good feedback mechanism. So not just as a coach noticing things and doing something about it, but also listening to other people, listening to your players. It could be getting feedback at the end of a session. So using the visual schedule, okay, everybody, now this is the time for feedback. How did the session go? Is there anything we could do differently? Did you have all the information you need? Learning from parents and learning from, you know, after a major events and having a good feedback form on the website. Like there's multiple ways to be able to have good mechanisms to receive information. But then the next thing is like doing something about it. And not just for your... you know, one event or for your one team, but maybe for the whole club, or sharing that information back with Basketball Victoria so that it benefits other people as well. So it's just having a really good system of learning and improving. And I think that's the big thing, is like, this is more of a process. It's a 6-step process where you keep going back around. So did I get, was I prepared enough? Did I have good enough information? Did I share enough information? Was the physical environment set up in a way that was intuitive and worked for everybody? Was the sensory environment okay? Or is there anything we could have done differently? Did we set up for success? Did everyone agree on the expectations and understand them? Did everyone feel welcome? Did we use a visual schedule to explain what's happening? Did we do I do, we do, you do? And then we go back around that process again. And this is why learn and improve is so important. It's about continuous improvement. It's not just about, yep, we did all these things. Let's go back around and see if we can do better again. Yep,
really like it. Bo, I'm curious, how do you find out, or how do you start the conversation with people in your team in particular to find out if there are people in your team that have autism?
Intake forms are really important, and really important for everybody. And asking the right kind of questions is also really important, because Rob, if you're autistic and I'm your coach and it's gotten on the form that Rob is autistic, that tells me absolutely nothing about what your strengths are, what your interests are, what support needs you might have, how you like to communicate. Also, if you don't have a diagnosis and or you're not autistic, it doesn't tell me anything about what your strengths are, what your interests are, how you like to learn, how you communicate best. Our autism friendly team are actually working on some intake forms and that we're going to share with Basketball Victoria to collaborate with, to be able to ask for the right type of information that is going to help coaches understand who their players are before they walk through the door. So you have the opportunity to be proactive. Make sure you've got your visual stories ready to go. Make sure you've got your visual schedule ready for training one. Making sure you understand who really benefits from visual instruction. And finding out what their strengths and their interests are is really going to be beneficial to help you coach those players. Now, I was a kindergarten teacher for 20 years, Rob, and let me tell you, getting parents to fill out any type of form is the actual worst. It is the hardest job of anybody, right? And so, you know, we can create these intake forms, but they're kind of useless if people don't fill it out. I'm not a parent, but if you're a parent and you've got four children, three children, two children, imagine how many forms you have to fill out. You got to fill out one for ballet. You got to fill out all the ones for the school. You got to find their immunization forms for the kindergarten.
Orienteering.
Yep. Yes. Do they know which way north is?
Yep.
Yeah. Like there is so.
I'm a bit dicey on that one, to be honest myself.
There's so many forms in which like parents are having to fill out. So no wonder it's really tricky for everybody when we put in the effort to create these intake forms, but yet nobody's filling it out, and so often people are going in blind. Again, just being flexible in how you take that information on, because you don't know the reason why somebody might not be filling it out. It might be that English is their third or fourth language and they don't actually really feel all that comfortable in writing in English. Being flexible, just having a little private chat with them at the end of basketball. And, it doesn't matter if the child is autistic or not. You can say, hey, little Sally over there, I was wondering if Sally gets upset at school or at home, what do you do to help her calm down? How do you support her to get through those challenging moments? And a parent is going to be able to tell you that information. So they might not be raring to go to fill out the forms, but opening up and having those conversations about how you can best support their child to participate rather than going, oh, your kid's autistic. Oh, God, what am I going to have to do in order to get this kid to participate?
Yep.
You know, it's about finding out how you can best support that child, that person to be a part of your team. Intake forms, hopefully we'll get those to Basketball Victoria soon.
Yep, they'll be widely distributed once we have a copy of them, just so that anyone that does want to use them can. And it is a big thing that it's amazing how many parents are appreciative of the fact that you're at least asking the question and they're aware that, okay, this is a safe environment for my child to be in, this is somewhere they're going to want to be in that space, because we know there are times where it can go wrong in particular. And I suppose that's probably my last question I have for you both. If conflict does arise, what are the best ways to try and de-escalate it, Matt? Like, have you seen anything that works? Is there a bit of a process that you go through?
Yeah. Again, before I answer that question, I think it's important to remember we're trying to do all of this other stuff so it doesn't get to that point. I think then we're not in that position as coaches.
Yep.
We're not in that position as autistic people where there's that difficulty that has to be dealt with.
Yep.
However, part of being autistic is, like, it's inevitable that meltdowns or shutdowns will happen, that challenges will arise, particularly as you're growing up and learning about the world and about yourself and so on as well. I think that, unfortunately, generally when it gets to the point of meltdown or shutdown, which we probably haven't defined really for people, but maybe I'll just do it quickly. Like, meltdown is generally an expression of overwhelm. So it might be things like kicking, screaming, crying, trying to get away as well. Shutdown generally is more internal and, hopefully shutdown makes sense, like the name. Yep. It's like my brain shuts down, basically. I can't respond. I'm not processing information and I just can't, like, respond or do as much or take on as much. So there's sort of both of them are maybe like slightly different responses. But I think generally when it gets to that point, there's not much you can do. You need time, space, peace and quiet, safety to be able to recover. And so generally just trying to find a place like a quiet room or a private, an office or something like that where you can just stop, chill, not have too much input, focus on something you like. So, having your phone and watching a funny video or something like that, like engaging your interests is really helpful. So I'm sure Bo would watch a basketball video or game or something like that to be able to recover. So I think just taking the pressure off is really important. Not pushing people and prodding people. It's helpful to develop pre-agreed strategies. So like Bo said, hey, when we get to this point, what are some things that we can agree on that we can do together so that you can trust me that I can take, as the coach, I can take the lead and say, hey, I think that we're a bit overwhelmed right now. It might be too much for you to go on the court right now. How about we take 5 minutes, go sit over here, put our noise-canceling headphones on, do a breathing exercise, and then we can come back and return to the activity. I think keeping communication really simple is important. It's really hard for people to process information when your brain is in meltdown or shutdown. So just keeping communication really simple and visual again, if possible. So often things like communication cards, so like break time, or you can use your visual schedule. Oh, we're going to have a break now because, again, it's hard to process lots of verbal information. Trying to take some of the decision-making load away. So, hey, this is what we're doing. And then thinking about the sensory environment, because if you're in meltdown or shutdown or overwhelm, all of that stuff is going to be heightened. So finding a quiet space or having noise cancelling headphones or earplugs available, putting on a hat or sunglasses because those overhead lights can be really bright, having stim tools that, available on the side that you can use, and then just having like really good structure and then learning and reflecting after it happens. So unfortunately, there's not like a golden bullet. This is how you do it. The process is, let's keep you safe now. Let's keep it calm now. So let's try and take some of the pressure off, find a quiet space, and then use our strategies to recover and cope, like sensory items or looking at something you're interested in, keeping it simple, and then trying to learn from it for next time. And so how can we reduce it getting to that point again, or next time, what can I do differently to be able to support you better?
Yep, really like it. And it's a, as you say, there's no golden way to do it in all of this. It really is get to know your players and give your players the safe, comfortable environment they're after and hope that it doesn't get to that point. But if it does, I think there's at least some strategies there that people can take away that I think will be really helpful for them as well. That does wrap it up. Thanks very much, both of you, for coming in. Like, I know, like, not often do we go over the hour mark, so I'd certainly appreciate the time that you've both given us in this space, because I think there will be, statistically, just so many people out there that are probably coaching people or are coaches within this space that just need a little bit more information. And I know you're both presenting at the Basketball Victoria Game Plan Conference coming up in November. It is. Yep. I can't remember the date, but it is all on the 29th. Basketball Victoria. There you go. can follow instructions like a bow. So if you are interested, obviously go along. I know someone contacted me during the week that is very keen for it because their daughter has just been identified as having autism as well. So there will be plenty of people out there that I think will be looking for more information as we become more aware of it and how they can be a big part of the solution in that. So just from the Basketball Victorian, thank you both very much for coming in and appreciate your time.
Thank you, Rob. It's been wonderful to be able to have a conversation with you and your listeners about creating a more autism friendly environment. Because as I've said before, I really do love basketball, and I want everybody to be able to have the opportunity to love it as much as I do.
Absolutely, I really appreciate your time. Thank you both, coaches. Thanks very much for the listen today. Brilliant work from both Matt and Bo in giving a great example on what coaching autistic people can look like and some of the areas that we can all work better in this space. So I think the biggest thing is it's not always going to be perfect, but we've got to be open to learning and improving in this space. And you know, you're probably not the only person that might be a little bit unsure about how to go about coaching autistic people in that space. But hopefully by listening to the podcast, you're in a better position now to be able to go away and put some strategies in place and work with the players in that space in particular to make it a better environment for everyone. So massive thanks again from Basketball Victoria with the partnership that we have with Autism Spectrum Australia and Matt and Bo for jumping in. They did a phenomenal job of talking through this one. So hopefully everyone enjoyed this one and got a lot out of it that can help with their coaching. And we'll catch everyone next week on the Talking Split podcast.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.